Dit is Yoko Ono, een avant-garde kunstenares van groot belang in de beweging van de moderne kunst in het Westen. Zij is sinds enige tijd ook de onafscheidelijke metgezelin van Beatle John Lennon. Yoko, I would like to start talking, or we have already been talking, about Fluxus and about your work or your connections with it.
Well, you see, Fluxus, I think George McCunis is the person who is the founder of Fluxus, and he's a purist, and any artist who has pure thoughts, you know, pure ideas, were sort of connected with it, you know.
Yeah.
But I don't particularly think that I am a member of Fluxus. I mean, I'm not a member of anything.
No.
I'm just myself, you know.
Yeah.
And of course, I mean, I have great respect for George McCunis. And also, I think it's very nice that people who are concerned and connected with Fluxus are connected with purity, you know, of mind and ideas, and that tremendously idealistic people, you think. And but I was an idealist before Fluxus was made, and before I had any connection with Fluxus, and after, you know.
And now I get the impression that more or less, to your amazement, you still find yourself in the idealist predicament, in that you have trouble reaching a large public with your recent work.
Yes, it's true, you know. I mean, now I'm sure that more people know my name, you know.
Yeah.
Obviously, not because of my work, but because of my connection with John Lennon, which is like sort of a strange label, you know, for an artist. And but I've always been a freak, you know, in a sense that even now in newspapers, you know, they don't know what to call, what to say about me, you know. So they sometimes say, well, a Japanese actress, Yoko Ono, or a film producer, or a composer, or a painter, anything they say.
Yeah.
You know. But it's very difficult to label a person, and nowadays, you know, art is so complex that you can't label somebody really, because sort of, you know.
Have you ever tried your hand at describing yourself, somehow labeling yourself, like a bottle sticking a label on itself?
I never bothered to,
no.
You know. So I always say whatever people think, whatever you think is me, you know.
Yeah.
And that's true.
So, what is your work right now? What are you doing? How are you spending your working days?
Oh, we have many different projects, really. I just don't know which one to tell you, really. I have an idea of a show where I want to do a show of sculptures.
Mm-hmm.
Also, I have not. We're just making a record and all that. One thing that is different now is that I've been working all by myself in a way, you know,
mm-hmm.
as an artist, and I never thought of doing a collaboration in artwork and all that.
Yeah.
But now that John and I'm together, we collaborate a lot, you know. And there are many different projects we have that are collaboration works, you know, in the future, especially records, you know.
Yeah. Well, you have been doing some collaboration in these two recent movies, in the record, The Two Virgins.
Yes.
Would you care to tell something about that, since I think nobody has seen it till now?
Yes.
At least nobody in Holland, that is.
Yes. Well, you see, I'm mainly concerned about vibration, you know.
Yeah.
And another thing is so funny is that John comes from a very different background from me, you know.
Yeah.
He comes from Liverpool and Popfield and everything.
Yeah.
And I was one person who's was never interested in pop, really.
No.
You know? No, not really.
Are you now?
When I first met him, I didn't even know the name John Lennon.
Yeah,
I didn't know the name Beatles.
Yeah.
You know? And I knew Ringo, because Ringo's easy to remember, you know.
Yeah.
But I never read pop magazines or pop newspapers, or never turned pop program on the TV, you know.
Offended.
No, it's just, I just never, it never occurred to me. And, you know, I was connected to Flux and things like that. And, but you see, in my field, my own field, which is art, you know, art, I was always considered somebody who is a little bit out of the group, out of everything, you know. So that they didn't know how to label me, you know.
No.
So the painters said, well, she's not really a painter, you know. And the composer said, no, she's not really a composer, you know. So I was always out of the circle, and but trying to, you know, sort of deal with the future and all that.
Yeah.
And John was always doing that too, you see.
In a way, John, not only changed pop, changed the meaning of it, but he obviously is always having his mind somewhere else.
I mean, always he was, without intending to, I think, but just by his nature, you know, he was a revolutionary, you know. And I was trying the same thing in a way, you know.
A revolutionary in what sense? Because we were just briefly talking about that. In what sense a revolutionary?
Well, I think that, I mean, just even the fact that he changed the image of working class people in Britain, you know, and it changed the image of Great Britain altogether, you know.
And he became a knight in the process, didn't he?
I changed the meaning of pop, everything, I think, you know. And so when we met, we couldn't believe that... there was so much connection, you know, of what we were doing, really.
Because this is something that interests me very much about you and about John, is this strange position you have, ambivalence, in being, on the one hand, a symbol of publicity and of everything that is going on in mass society, on the other hand, strangely digging underground. And how do you feel that position? I mean, on the one hand, to be so publicized, and on the other hand, not really to belong there.
Well, you know, that makes it very difficult for us in a way. I mean, both of us are terribly tough people, you know, strong people. So, I mean, you don't have to worry, really. But still, I mean, also, we're very vulnerable people, too, at the same time, you know.
Yeah.
It's a great paradox, in a way. So we almost feel like we're in a high, sort of, top of a high tree or something, where the wind is blowing very strong, and we're just sort of holding each other, you know, and shivering or something sometimes, you know, the insecurity of it. But because the underground people obviously think that we're established, you know.
Yeah.
And the establishment thinks, well, you know, they're crazy, you know, they're freaks, you know.
Yeah. So you told me you weren't even established enough now to find a distributor for your film.
No, it simply doesn't exist. I think in the within the frame of this society, there's no established film distributor who could distribute this kind of film. But it's all right because, you see, the whole system is starting to change in a way.
Yeah.
And just like Hollywood was the center of film at one time, but now it's not, you know. Europe and England, you know, are becoming very important in the film world. And that was 5 years ago. But now they're starting this thing about college circulation, you know, of underground films.
The university circuit in the States.
And also people, I mean, children are starting to film things when they're eight, you know, five maybe even, you know, and it's beautiful, you know, it's, the whole world is starting to change, you know.
Well, because, for example, you have this record, The Two Virgins, and after all, Apple is a record distribution company in which John must have some say, and as yet, since May, it hasn't been brought out. So what do you think is going to happen?
Well, because, you know, after all, Apple will have to think about the financial and commercial side, you know, of the establishment. I mean, well, let's say it's not really an establishment in an establishment sense, but, I mean, after all, it is a company, and it has to have its security and, you know, protect themselves and all that. So they thought our idea was crazy, you know.
Really?
In the beginning, I think they've been, most of them. And these days, of course, I mean, they start to understand, of course, you know. But It was difficult in the beginning, yes.
I'm still more or less the same kind of theme. So there is this existence which John and you lead, which is a creative and artistic affair, and I think also a love affair. Now, which is very heavily publicized in this world. And
it's not only heavily publicized, but both of us, you know, we just can't help talking about each other, you know, to other people.
Yeah.
So it becomes that, you know. I mean, we're responsible too of it, I think, in a way, you know. So we're not hiding it.
I was asking you about, well, your life together with John, it being read and followed almost like a, you know, a novel in installments in the daily newspapers, like yesterday about the kid and everything at Intertel, and about you both being so aware of what you actually are doing.
Mm.
Now the question was, do you somehow try to lead an exemplary life, not in the moral sense, but in the way of tracing new ways of living, which might be followed by others?
Well, you see, the thing is that, I mean, you don't fall in love by thinking that you should make an example of yourself and anything like that. We're not really concerned about that.
No.
We're just two people who are so sort of, we can't hide things, you know.
Yeah.
We can't help it. And the things that, I mean, the thing that happened to us, which is that we met, you know, which is really like a miracle in a way, because, I mean, I come from Tokyo and all that, you know. Just if... we weren't doing anything in the way of work, you know. I mean, John being in Beatle and I being, well, whatever, you know. we would never have met, you know, because I was in Turkey.
How did you actually meet?
First he came to the Syndica Gallery show that I had of my sculptures and paintings.
Yeah.
And at that time, it was almost like a Zen meeting, you know. It was really funny, yes. Because I didn't know about that. He just climbed up a ladder.
Mm-hmm.
There was a piece called ceiling painting.
Yeah.
And there's a painting on the ceiling, you see.
Yeah.
And my idea was for people to climb up a long, long ladder, just go on climbing up like this, you know, and then finally reaching the ceiling, and you look at the painting, and it says yes, you know. And the Indica Gallery wasn't so high, so the ceiling wasn't so high, but still, it was that piece, you see. You had to climb up the ladder, and you see it with a magnifying glass, you know, tiny little letter saying yes,
yes.
And that's the first piece he saw.
Yeah.
And he says now that if that said no instead of yes, you know, he wouldn't bother to see the show anymore. But that yes was like an answer to him, you see.
Before he even asked the question.
Before even he met me, he hasn't met me yet, you know. It was just that, you know.
Yeah.
So he went because he has this very rebellious attitude towards artists too, you know.
Yeah.
So, I mean, so art world, you know, art world is an establishment too, you see. So he's not impressed with the art world or anything. He said, art world, you know, that attitude, cynical attitude. But his cynicism disappeared when it said yes, and he thought, it was nice, you know.
Yeah.
So, and then he came downstairs, and I was there, and and then the gallery owner just told me, you know, this man wants to hammer a nail in your hammer nailing piece, which is a piece of painting where you hammer nailing, you see. And I didn't want him to do it because it was so white and so beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
And it was still a virgin painting, you see. Nobody hammered a nail in yet, you see.
Yeah.
So I said, no, I don't want him to do that. And especially it was before the opening.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, after the opening maybe, but not now, you know. And the gallery owner said, oh no, let him do it and all that. So I said, all right, if he pays 5 shillings, it's okay. You know? Because I decided that because my painting will never sell anyway, so that anybody who wants to hammer a nail hammer nail painting should pay 5 shillings.
Yeah.
So each nail would be 5 shillings, you know.
Did you actually know he was John Lennon, or you hadn't realized?
No, I didn't know.
No, no, and it wouldn't have meant anything to you.
No, not really, you know.
Yeah.
And then, I said that 5 shillings.
Mm-hmm.
But I think John probably didn't have 5 shillings. Because he never carries money in those days, you know. So he said, instead of paying you 5 shillings, may I just hammer an imaginary nail in, you know? And I thought, oh, that's beautiful, beautiful idea. And all my instructions were becoming my painting and sculpture instructions were becoming imaginary, you know.
Yeah.
Yes. So I thought, oh, this is another person who thinks like me, you know, in that sense. And so I said, oh, yes, that's all right, you know. And after he left, you see, there was an art student who was helping my show. There were many art students helping my show. And one of them said, I think that's John Lennon. So I said, who's John Lennon? He said, do you know the Beatles, you know? And so I said, yes, I do, you know. And he said, he's one of them, you know.
Yeah.
But I didn't quite understand it then, you know. But I had a very good feeling because in every show, every day, I was doing an event there, sort of like a happening. But my happenings are very quiet, you know, like Fluxus type thing, you see. So that the event of that day, probably the gallery owner was saying, oh, Yoko Ono is going to do her cut piece or something, you know. And so everybody expected some fantastic happening, you know, where a girl would become nude or something, you see.
Yeah.
But whenever they asked me, what is the event today, where is the event happening, you know, I just produced a little card. And in the middle of it, just a tiny little sign saying, breathe, you know?
Yeah.
So I just showed it to him and said, this is today's event. So he went like that. Do you do that way?
Yeah.
So I said, yes, that's all right. That's, you know, okay. And that's how we met, you see.
I see.
Mm.
I'm not going to ask you a question about this. I'm going to sum up a few words which I picked up in the last 20 minutes. John was saying, I was asking him something about revolution, and he said, at a certain moment, I'm with Jesus.
Mm.
You have dropped words like, it was like a Zen moment, and the word vibrations, and purity in art.
Mm-hmm.
I don't see how to make a question out of that, but maybe there's an answer.
I don't know. Well, you know, we're just doing our things, you know, without really intending to make an example or anything like that. But at the same time, of course, you know, we have this awareness that we're hoping that our good vibration, if we do have good vibrations, we have bad vibrations too, but, you know, would sort of communicate, you know.
Yeah.
Because we're basically artists who are interested in communication.
Yeah.
And this is the age of instant communication, you know. And communication equals art, you know, is art, you know. And art is communication. Whereas some poets still believe in just scribbling, writing, and stacking his poems in the closet or something. But we don't believe in that, you see. So I really think, you know, the medium is a message thing, you know. And so in that sense, I think we are aware of that, you know, aware of the fact that we're communicating. But not specially, you know, not as special people, because I think whatever anybody does, even a milkman or anybody around, you know, in the world, if they cough, you know, or even sneeze, you know, it's going to affect the whole world, you know.
Elaborate.
Yes, yes. Yeah. I mean, really, because anything that, even a tiny bit of thing that you do, you know, because we're all together, you see. In the whole world, yes.
That would paralyze me, because anything I would do would... I would be crushed by the responsibility that anything I do is endlessly meaningful and has endless consequences. There must be some things that are more meaningful than others, some important things.
No, I don't think so. I think you don't have to feel overburdened with responsibility or anything. It's just that it's just a fact, you know.
Yeah.
It's like the fact that there's air, you know,
yeah.
And air is connected everywhere, you know.
Yeah.
In other words, Tokyo and London is connected with air.
Yeah.
That's a fact, you know.
Yeah.
And there's no responsibility or anything about that, you know. Just like that, we're all connected, you know.
Yeah. I feel some decisions are more momentous. I think about them longer than others. So do you, probably.
Well, you know, we're not people who sort of depend our lives on decisions, you know. We're more intuitive,
yeah.
You understand, sort of intuitive people, and more sort of maybe essential physical people, you know. So things happen, you know,
yeah.
Not that we decide to do things, you know.
Yeah.
And the most startling, amazing thing that happened to us recently was the fact that we've met, you know. And the fact that things are happening since then, you know.
Yeah.
And so that's very good, I think, you know.
Would you like to explain what vibrations are and how you feel them?
Yes, well, you know, that again, you know, it has nothing to do with moral, you know,
yeah.
Or literature. It's not literature or moral at all. It's just a scientific fact, like air. You know, you immediately connected the fact that we're connected, you know, you said
yeah.
Responsibility. That's moral
yeah.
problem, you know.
Yeah.
But no, I think vibration is just purely vibration, like electricity, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, there's electricity in the air, and that, shall I go on or stop? The age will come where, I mean, I bore professionalism, you know.
Yeah.
I think professionalism is finished, you know.
Yeah.
It's not the age of professionalism. And the reason why I'm doing these things in my work,
yeah.
All my paintings and all my sculptures are unfinished.
Yeah.
And this two versions record is called Unfinished Music, you see. And that is because I want people to finish it
mm-hmm.
or go on adding something to it so the piece will always go on growing, you know.
Yeah.
Like hammer and nail in piece, you have to hammer and nail in, you know. And everybody comes and keeps hammer and nailing. Or wrapping or a sculpture, which is to wrap, you know,
yeah.
And go on wrapping. So the sculpture would become bigger and bigger, you know, and all that. And two versions too, I think, this is the, not the film, but the music, the record, you know. I think either people can add some sound to it
yeah.
when they listen to it, you know. Play their own music with it, maybe. Or finish it in your own mind, you know.
Yeah.
Just imaginary music in your mind or something like that.
So when you say this is the end of professionalism, you mean it's the end of the professional artist?
What I mean is that everybody's an artist.
Yeah.
Everybody's God, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just that they're inhibited. So all I have to do is just knock the door, you know, once, and they open it, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, it's becoming that kind of an instantaneous age of communication,
yeah.
You know. And everybody can create, really. It's just the inhibition, you know. And so when I say vibration, I mean we have energy, you know. And the energy sends out, projects a certain wave, you know, like electric wave or sound wave,
yeah.
You know, and sends out energy to other people.
Yeah.
And that is vibration, you know. And the good example is telepathy, you know. I
yeah.
think it's going to come to an age where everybody can understand each other. Just now, you know, before this, you were talking about, you had the same idea with Nanjun Paik.
Yeah.
Yes, we all have same ideas these days because we're like antenna, you see?
Yeah.
And we catch other people's vibrations and ideas because it's telepathy.
Yeah.
That's why I'm saying that everything you do affects me because we are all together and we're all connected. Like air. Air is connected everywhere, you know. And we're connected with air. So that we are, what you call, common property, I mean, of each other, yeah, in that sense. And our mind is a common property, you know. In other words, whatever I think, you know, is not original. It's just something that I catch with my antenna. You know, that's what, yeah, how I feel. So I don't take my work so seriously in that sense, you see. I take it seriously in the sense that I really want the future to be like that, like everybody artist, you know, being artist and being interested in peaceful, you know, creative things, yeah, rather than violence, you know.
Yeah.
And so in that sense, I believe it. But I think that whatever came to me is not my talent, but just something that I caught in the air. And yeah, I'm just a kind of medium to express it, you know.
The provost from Amsterdam,
yes,
our great contribution to the international revolution, mm-hmm, talked about a playful revolution in which I think people would stop working that hard and just groove, play. Mm-hmm. Does that appeal to you?
Yes, well, you see, what I think now is if people start to, with the instructions, you know, like a sculpture instruction and all that, I'm trying to open people's mind so, yeah, they can participate in art, you know. Participation, yeah, of art is very important, you know. And so they would start to be interested in things like that, ridiculous things, like dance, you know.
Yeah.
And dances may be ridiculous, you know. It's not necessary, you know. But it's beautiful.
Yeah.
You know? And instead of going to the office by just walking, if they start to go to the office by drawing a somersault and just walking by hand, you know, something like that, things like that, it becomes humorous. Instead of fighting with each other, you make a rule that before you fight, you take off your pants, each of them,
yeah,
you know. And that becomes a rule in the society. And then it's so funny, you know, if both of you who are fighting have no pants on, you don't fight anymore, you,
yeah,
laugh, you,
yeah,
know.
Yeah.
So art is humor in that sense, you know.
Yeah.
And that way people forget about violence, I think.
Yeah. I'm thinking of a new label for you.
Yes.
I'll keep it secret.
Oh, yes, sir.
I'm thinking, because you say, I'm not an artist, I give instructions,
yes, yes,
for people to discover their own creativity.
Yes, yes.
So, in a way, you're teaching.
Well, I don't know. I'm saying that this is an instant communication age, you know.
Yeah.
And we're sort of instantly disposable people, you see. In other words,
yeah,
as of now, this is maybe necessary, you know.
Yeah.
But next century, mm-hmm, you know, we're just an immediate happening. I'm an immediate happening too, you see. It's just that, you see. So just now, I think instruction does make, does have its place, usage, you know. But in the next stage, something else will happen probably.
And people might not even need instruction.
No,
anymore.
No, you know.
Yeah.
So that I don't feel it's teaching, really. I think I'm just a function that is usable in that sense at this point.
I have another question. This whole idea of creativity has come up, say, in the West again, because people our age start feeling that we somehow made it materially, in a material sense, just like Japan did, that the immediate necessities of life are not so urgent anymore that you couldn't allow yourself to do some, well, to play again.
Mm-hmm.
And that somehow...
No, I don't really think so. You know, I don't think of art as something decorative, you know.
No.
I think art is functional, you know. Functional in the sense that a cup is functional for drinking, you know, and art is functional for spiritual function, you know.
Yeah.
And so, well, all right, so that's what I think, you know.
I see.
In that sense.
What I'm getting at is that maybe we forgot, I mean, the spiritual function during a time that people concentrated upon improving their material environment. I mean, producing. I mean,
no, spirit is always there. I think even when materially we're not satisfied. We'll never be satisfied materially either, you know. Mm. We're all gluttons, you know. I mean, our mind is immense, you know.
Yeah.
And there's no end, no limit to our mind, you know. Maybe physically we're limited, but... Mm. So our desire is limitless, you know. So that we'll never be satisfied materially. There's always a spiritual problem, even when there's a limited material situation. Yeah.
Do you feel that in Japan there has been a more continuity in maintaining some spiritual function all through the age of industrialization and development?
I don't think Japan is particular in any way, you know, in that sense, no. It's just that it's just sort of slightly different, you know, slightly different in expression, in a way of expression. But I mean, everybody in any part of the world, they all need something functional for their spirit, you know.
Shall we talk about purity and nudity and about your work
right.
in nudity?
Purity.
Do you like to
That's
talk about it?
That's a strange title, but I don't mind. Go ahead.
Well, I was trying to phrase the question, but you're going about, you know, the idea of nudity being interesting, beautiful, even pure, everything, is very classical in European art. Yet the way you have presented it, to me sounds... I find aggression in it. I don't know where it is.
Nudity is just a very small part of my works, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, I have very many different other works, you know. But because this is a sexually repressed society at this moment that we're living in, you know, this is a period where we still have that. You know, that is the only hang-up that still exists and so forth. And so that whenever I do something that has anything to do with nudity, which I think just the same as anything else, you know, just sort of on the same level, they blow it up, you know.
Yeah.
So it communicates more, I think. So, you know, you think of it more, maybe.
So you may have chosen the subject precisely because...
No, I haven't chosen precisely because.
No.
It just happened, you know.
Yeah.
It's just another happening that happened in my life, so to speak.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, that's true, because of the choice of buttocks. Because, after all, genitals, people are somehow proud of them. But nobody is... And so, in a way, buttocks, without being so taboo as genitals, are annoying. People don't want to think about them. There's nothing mm-hmm. to be very proud of. And mm-hmm. so, there I felt a sarcasm on your part.
Well, I thought of it mainly as a humorous thing, yes.
Yeah, yeah. It's rather sarcastic, I mean.
Maybe, yes, yes. Yeah. I don't know about the sarcasm, but I mean, I'm not a very cynical person, actually.
No
women are, really. I mean, cynicism is a man's product, I think. Yeah,
just go.
Shall I go, John?
Okay. You better explain that out of my skull, out of my mind, from the dentist. Oh, you don't have to, but I'll get all those sort of freaky people saying, here, man, have some STP, here, man.
So now here's John. He came in the interview.
Here I am. Nostar.
And we're talking about... You want to talk about the
vibration of it.
Yeah.
But you see, and also, I was talking about... Oh, well, you said about... you found a new label for me, teaching and all that.
Yeah.
But there was somebody who asked me, said, would you be very pleased if somebody would perform your piece, you know, perform or show your sculptures or something like that in... 100 years time or 1,000 years time or something like that, like Beethoven or you know. But then, you know, I thought of it then, you know, and I thought, no, I won't be, you know, I won't be pleased, because the thing is, as I said, the communication is becoming more and more instantaneous, you know. And things that means something now means something now because of its function, you know, that is very applicable to this particular instance.
But if it's real truth, you know, it lasts forever.
Yes, but truth is always there. So that
they don't show it again.
But in 100 years, there'll be other people who would be living in that society, that generation, who would have what they have to say, you know.
Yeah.
So if they have to depend on me at that age, you know, I'll be very sorry for that age, you know. And I think they should just forget about me.
But you don't depend on Picasso and Leonardo, do you?
But you see, the problem of this is that I believe in people so much, so that if the total, all the museums and library and all that would be burnt, you know, and the whole civilization is burnt, so we don't have any memory of civilization, you know. Even then, I think after that whole thing is burnt, people will start to build their own art. You know, because art is necessity and function, you know. So that's going to happen. And we don't need history. History is not necessary.
It doesn't exist, does it?
Well, it exists too much now, you see, because we are living almost between corpses, you know, between graves. You know, there are many graves, you know.
Yeah.
And between many, many father figures, you know, Nietzsche, Tolstoy, you know, Bach, Beethoven, all these people are... in your mind and clotting your mind, you know.
Yeah.
So it's almost like having a famous father, and you can't create if you have a famous father, but you can't do anything.
But don't you have the feeling, which, like, I have a writer, it's Thomas Hobbes, who is an English philosopher for some reason, because he's a very angry man. I have the feeling that I keep talking to him like he lived in 1650, you know. That there are people from the past you're talking to.
Yeah, well, the same thing with Elvis Presley and Little Richard.
It's true, because, you know, past, future, and present is just a way of describing things, but it really doesn't exist. You know, past, you know, present, future, it's all the same thing, you know.
Yeah.
So it doesn't really matter. I mean, you can travel from future to past and from past to future.
Okay,
you know?
Well, why are we keeping but all these still, souvenirs and photographs of ourselves?
Ourselves is all right.
The same for society in the world. They like to have all their diaries.
It's all right to have your sort of personal...
But that's national personal,
affection,
you know, that's all.
You know. But the thing is, history-wise,
we don't
there's
get
so
on
many
at all.
Father figures. Oh, I see. Well, it's, you know, there's so many father figures, you know. And of course, John does agree too, because he's one completely against establishment. You know.
Oh yeah, but I think they should turn everywhere into a museum. I mean, it is a museum. They just need to put a label on it all. Yeah.
All right. Well, if you had said what I had said,
oh, I always disagree.
I would say the same thing that you had said now. In other words, you know,
we just have
a conversation, just to have a dialogue, you know,
Yeah, she's foreign, you know.
I almost think that we are just one body, you know, but just for convenience, we are taking two bodies. So we can meet too, or we can fight too. You understand? To have a dialogue, you have to have two bodies and, you know, two.
Yin yang.
But otherwise, so whenever I say something, you know, and he disagrees, the same thing if he had said, I would say the same thing that he had said, you know. It's always that.
It's now or never.
Would you care talking about the marijuana thing?
Yeah, what about it?
Well, Fritz, what happened?
Well, we were lying in bed feeling very clean and drugless because we'd heard 3 weeks before they were coming to get us and we would have been silly to have drugs in the house. And then all of a sudden a woman comes to the front door or to the front of the flat and rings a bell and says, I've got a letter for you. And we lift up, Yoko lifts up the thing, you know, like you press a bell and the door opens.
Yeah.
Says, who is it? She says, you're not the postman, Yoko says. And she says, no, it's very personal. So she goes out and suddenly there's this woman starts pushing the door and she thinks it's the press or, you know, sort of fans or something. And then we ran back in and hid. And neither of us were dressed really, we just had vests on, you know. and our lower parts were showing, you know.
Yes, we weren't.
We shut the door, and she was on the floor. I said, "What is it? What is it?" I thought it was the mafia or something. And she told me, then there's a big bangy at the bedroom window, and a big sort of super policeman's there, sort of growling. And he said, "Let me in, let me in." I said, "No, you're not allowed in like this, are you?" I was so frightened and high. I said, "Shouldn't you even come round the front door? Just let me get dressed." And he said, "Oh, open the window and all that. I'm going to fall off," he was saying.
He took the trouble to climb up the whole way.
Well, there were some at the front and some at the back, you see.
From the window they came, you know. And so I kept saying, "Please let John put pants on," you know. Because, I mean, after all, we didn't have pants on
yet. Prudes, you know.
That's what it is, maybe.
I just didn't want to show the policeman. And so we kept them, and Yoko held the window while I got dressed, and she sort of got dressed half leaning out the bathroom so she could see we weren't hiding anything. And then they started charging the door. I had a big dialogue with the policeman and saying, "It's bad publicity if you come through the window." And he was going, "Just open the window and you make it worse for yourself." And I said, "I want to see the warrant." So another guy comes on the roof and they show me this paper. I pretend to read it just to try and think what to do.
And I was just calling the lawyer, you see.
Yeah, I was saying, "Call the lawyer, call the lawyer." And she calls our office instead. I said, "No, not the office, the lawyer." And
I finally called her.
Finally, well done. And then there was heave on the door. So I ran and opened it and said, okay, you know, I'm clean anyway, thinking I was clean. No drugs, that means. And he says, got you for obstruction. I said, "Oh, you know, sounds okay." Because I felt confident I had no drugs. And then they all came in, you know, lots of them and a woman. And I was saying, "Well, what happens now, you know? Can I call the office? I've got an interview in a few hours, or in an hour. Can I call them and tell them I can't come?" "Well, you're not allowed to make a phone call." "Can I use your phone?" So they said, that's going on. And then our lawyer came.
And they brought the dogs.
No, they brought some dogs. They couldn't find the dogs because they must only have two, you know. And they kept ringing up saying, "Yeah, Charlie, where's the dogs? We've been here half an hour now." And the dogs came, and I had all my stuff moved into the flat from my house. I'd never looked at it, just been there for years. I'd ordered cameras and clothes, but my driver had brought binoculars, you know, which I don't need in a little flat with a view like that. And inside the binoculars was some hash from last year.
Yeah.
And somewhere else in an envelope at the bottom was another piece of hash. So that was it.
You're talking about, you know, I didn't really touch you. Did you feel...
No, I was frightened, you know. I mean, I'm paranoid anyway, both are, especially about people coming to the door and that.
I mean... I have the kind of high that I'm always at times afraid of that happening. You know,
well, it's better when it happens.
Yeah.
You know, it's been building up for years.
Yeah.
Thinking something had happened. And now the fear has gone a bit. That you know what it's like. It's a bit different. You know. And it's not too bad.
You got a £100 sentence.
£100 something
or 150.
£150.
Do you have an opinion on drug laws? Would you want to care to say something?
I just think they should make some differentiation between the hard and soft drugs, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I think maybe they should have pop bars, you know, if they're going to have alcohol, you know. But I don't know. I'd sooner ban sugar, you know.
Has this changed your feeling towards, say, Britain, the establishment?
No, I knew what Britain, the establishment, were, you know. I've been around it a long time. It's just the same as anywhere else, only the stiff upper lip. They don't show any happiness or sadness, you know. But it's the same here as anywhere. You know.
Did you feel you got differential treatment? Is that the word that you were treated better than any...
No, they tried very hard not to be biased against or for...
So we have to wait until he's changed the film.
And what he thinks went on...
Yeah.
On one record, you know.
Mm. Would you care to go on this? Is it all right with you, Yoko?
Yes. Well, what I was going to say was, the thing is, in art, you know, there are certain people who believes that art belongs to the gallery and all that, you know. And I really believe that art belongs to the street, you know, to the people and all that, you know. And so in that sense, artists are just as responsible, you know, as anybody else towards the society, because, you know, it's a sort of...
And just as influential, you know.
Yes, so that just as I was going to say almost the same thing that Joan was saying right now, which was that the fact that if I become a politician, you know, that's why I think politicians sort of useless scene for me. If I become a politician, so there's so many red tape and all that, you know, and just to go through that, you know, I'm just going to be killed as a person, as spiritually, you know, as a person. So I think I'm communicating just as well and better, you know, through my work, you see.
Yeah.
Which John is doing too, but what I mean is, I really believe, for instance, when I made the Smile film, you know, that the smile vibration that John sends to the world, you know, is going to change the world much more quickly and more effectively than any politicians can do, you know. And so all the
without them knowing it.
Right, so all the vibrations that we're sending, you know, I always believe that that is politics, you know. That is a quiet revolution, you know. And I believe in that kind of quiet revolution instead of violence, you know.
Yeah.
And I know that these young students and all that, they're starting to get desperate now and saying, no, there's no way out. The establishment is never going to change. So we must fight, you know, and violence to violence, you know. But I don't believe that. I really think that the time is rolling faster and faster now, you know, because of the very highly developed communication media, you know, and people can communicate instantaneously, so that and another thing that's very good is that when you know something, you know, you can never unknow it, you know, so that you say establishment, oh, they're never going to come through, you know, but once you knock the door and once they open the door, they can't close it, you know.
And the point is that the establishment doesn't really exist, and the ones that do, if it does exist, it's old people, and all the people that want to change it
are young people.
Are young, and they're going to be the establishment. Now, if they want to smash it all down and have to be labourers as well to build it up again, well, that's what they're going to get. But if they just realise that the establishment can't last forever. The only reason it has lasted forever is because the only way people have ever tried to change it is by revolution or violent revolution. And the idea is just to move in on scene, you know, that's all they have to do. So they can take over the universities, do all that, do all the things that are practically feasible at the time, but not try and take over the state or smash the state or slow down the works and all that. All they've got to do is get through and change it, because they will be it.
No, but you see, the point is not to take over an institute or building, you know.
Well, I was just saying I agree with the city.
I know, but I mean, you know, instead of taking over the building, they have to work against or towards the mind, you know.
Yeah.
It's the mind that has to be changed, you know, not the building. Just taking over the building is no good, you see. So the point is... actually, everybody is really now ready to open their mind, you know. And all you have to do is really just sort of say, here, you know. And the establishment, which is sort of like a symbol of ignorance, you know. But the people, there are going to be more and more people who are aware of things.
Yeah.
And statistically. Because, I mean, once you're aware of it, you can never not be aware of it, you know. So it goes on and on like that, you know, like an epidemic. Everybody's going to be aware of it, you see. So there are going to be fewer and fewer people who are ignorant about things.
I have a doubt here, which is, you say you have to communicate, but within communication there's power too. I mean, you give a message and somehow it's turned around. Like I was, like I said, I loved you for signing the Vietnam thing. I was angry at you. Taxman thing, because I said, okay,
the Taxman song.
Yeah, because in the end it's going to work out.
But that Taxman song was an anti-establishment tax song, where we said, if you walk the street, they'll tax your feet. If you buy a all that. Now, what have you got against that?
Well, my point is also, it was going to be used, or it might be used to say lower taxes. I want high taxes because I want to liberate people.
Oh, okay, at the time George wrote it, and I helped him with it, we weren't aware of the whole tax scene. I'm not really aware of what goes on with the taxes. We believe that, you know, if you earn it, you may as well keep it, unless there's a communal or communist or Christian, real Christian society, that if we're going to live, while we're living in this, I protest against paying the government what I have to pay them. You know, what you were saying before is exactly what I said in Revolution, in all the versions, is that change your head.
Yes.
Now, these people that are trying to change the world can't even get on together. In fact, they can't recognize a friend, which is me and Yoko even, because they say, oh, they've sold out, they've made it, whatever. They start attacking and biting each other's faces.
Mm-hmm.
And all the time, we're all pushing the same way, so we're going like that. But it's forward.
Yeah.
And if they keep doing that, that's going to kill it before it even moves.
Yeah.
Only luckily it won't, you know, it won't alter me. I'll still do the same. But it's silly to bitch about each other and be trivial and not think in terms of at least the world or at least the universe and stop thinking in terms of factories and one country.
Yes, and also money, you know. Money is just a concept, you know. Actually, money is not money. Money is like an imaginary thing, almost, you see? And so that, why does everybody feel that people have to pay with money, you know? You can pay with a song, even, you know, you understand. And that's what he's doing. He's paying to the society with a song.
Yeah, you know? Right.
Yes, yes. So that you have to understand that part. Everybody's always thinking in terms of buildings, money, anything that is material, you know. But materialism is just 20% of our existence, you know. Our life consists of mainly of the spiritual world, the mind world, you know.
Yeah.
And that's where we live, you see. So if you want to change the world at all, then that's where we have to change. No, not with money and buildings.
Well, the thing is, I know how I felt when I was at college at 19 and 20, and I would have been completely for complete destruction. I always hoped for it anyway, just as a happening, you know, just to be able to go and loot or anything, just to destroy it. I would have done then, you know. I don't know whether I would now. I still like stealing things. You know, I don't, because I can't be bothered.
But you don't do it.
But, you know, that's how I felt then. For if there was somebody like me, I might listen. There's a chance that I might get through to 5 out of the 20 violent revolutionaries here. Because the ones that are really militant, and that they're exactly the same as the people that are against, they're creating that same situation already.
Yeah, but now, say, for example, I agree with you in most cases, but for example, imagine you're black in America, and you've been talking for 100 years.
Yes, okay, I believe in reincarnation, right?
Yeah.
So that's one thing that helps me in an overall view of things. Mm-hmm. I believe that I've probably been black, I've probably been Jewish, I've probably been female, I've probably been a tree or anything, and that helps a lot. So a lot of sort of intellectuals or reincarnation, but even so, you can make it, you know. It might be tougher physically and materialistically to make it, being black and that, but you can make it, you know. And I sympathize, and I think it's terrible. I believe all the you know, I believe it should be smashed one way or another, people's prejudice, but they won't change it really by violence. Okay, so the black power scene, you know, good luck to it, because at least it's frightening them. But it might frighten them enough to kill them and have a real war. Okay, so then if the blacks took over, all well and good. But all the blacks aren't saints. You know, it's going to be the same scene, just a different version.
You know, for instance, I believe that the situation of the women in the world is today, you know, it's like a woman is like the nigger of the world. And so that's why we understand about the Negro problem very much.
Rolling Stone.
Shall we talk about money? Or
if you want, yeah.
Oh, money. You want to talk about money?
Do you want to talk about money?
She said it about money.
I did say it already.
Yeah. So what do you want me to say? I've got nothing to say about it. Well,
about, what's your situation?
My situation is that the other day I was told that if I wanted to buy any more or waste any more money, which I do, either waste it by giving it to relatives or friends or people that want it, always in the hope that they'll do something with it, you know, but it's like that. It doesn't work. And a few divorces, and suddenly I'm like the poorest beetle, it's surprising. So he said, if you want to use any more money, you'll have to sell something you already have. Now, I don't care if I have no money or a lot of money, you know. I'm not out to make more money, but I'm out to break even. Now, I've earned it, the money I've got. But a lot of other people who should be nameless have carved us up in the usual way that pop stars and people are carved up. And my main concern about money, I never bother about it, only the thought that there's quite a few people sitting comfortably having done nothing but trick us to get our money, you know. And I'd sooner throw it down the drain or give it away to the fascists or the Tories or the left wing or anybody rather than just be conned. I'm always conned, you know, because I'm straight, fairly straight. And I never realized, I thought it was sharp, you know, and I wouldn't be conned, but I've been conned all the time.
Do you get this feeling which many stars have that you can't trust anybody?
Oh, well, you know, I trusted them all, and I don't really trust anybody, basically. But I always open myself up to them and completely straight with them. In the trust that inside them, I trust them. I trust their soul. But through this, that's why the accountant came up and said, now you've got to start selling. Yeah. Which is the only thing that bugs me. It's ridiculous. Because of the amount of money we have earned, but not that we've got. All the stories about how much we've got is a lot of lies anyway. But we've got a lot of money compared to most people, you know. But it's just the fact that being conned, you know, I'm getting used to it now.
Why don't you publish, say, the financial situation to cut off the lines?
Because it's so complicated. I even asked my accountant, couldn't I just give it all away and just keep enough to live on? And it'd be so complicated to do that, and such a ritual, and such a scene. Or why can't we set up a charitable first trust for this, that, or the other? Well, you can, but in 5 years, when you've set up a business that does this and the money goes through that, and that's beyond me, you know. I can't understand it at all. I've always had no regard for money. I've always wanted it. I wanted clothes if I was a kid, or a guitar, but I only wanted certain objects, you know. Or I dreamed of marrying a rich woman or something, or being a famous this. I never really, you know, money was no goal for me. Just my thing happened to earn me money, you know, and that's it.
There's another thing that's... do you follow very closely the sales of, say, the latest album? Are you...
Oh, sure, yeah. You know. Especially singles, when they first come out, we follow how much the initial sales were. Not for the money reason, just to see how it's doing compared to the last one.
As a sport thing.
Yeah, well, just because we made it, you know.
Yeah.
And we like to know how it's doing everywhere.
How's Jude?
Oh, hey, the album's great, you know.
Yeah.
There's no worries with that.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know the sales figures, I just know it's top of the LP chart, so that means it's winning.
Yeah.
You know, and ditto in America.
Yeah.
So that's good. I mean, we need that satisfaction, not the glory of number one.
Mm-hmm.
You know, just because we know this, like the last single was better than the one before that.
Yeah.
So we're pleased that that last single did much better than the last 10 or 20, or even better than all time, I've heard. I'm not sure. You know, better than She Loves You even, because we're pleased with it, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And so that kind of interest, it's like any kind of artist, has a product, unless he's so pure. If he's going to be a real purist like the Flux people, They should paint their paintings or do their poetry and then rip it up. And not show it to anybody.
True, either, in a way.
But if you're going to show it to everybody, you know,
no,
and
you
be
see,
interested.
John, but the thing is that the main purpose of art is communication. So
yeah,
even in a pure sense, you know, you don't paint and display.
But I mean, if you're
going to
be such a purist that you won't have any community, like the, you told me about the Flux people, won't have anything to do with anybody that's vaguely made it.
Yeah, that's
so what's he doing?
Money. Yeah,
it's a paradox.
That's a kind of snobbery, you know.
It's inverted snobbery,
yes.
Yeah. I mean, if you're going to be trying to be a purist, which is stupid, I think, but I believed it at one time, that if you were an artist and you were going to be really pure, nobody should see it. You know, it was enough to do it.
Yeah.
But, I mean, through the records, I broke through that. Yeah. But even with drawings and things, it was with talking to Yoko, and she convinced me, which I knew in my soul, but, you know, my prejudice wouldn't have it, that anything I draw or write is just as important communication-wise. I shouldn't just show it to friends.